Hello.
Hi, and welcome to Mass Murder, a true crime self-care podcast. We're your hostesses, Avery
and Nicole, and we're here to tell you about two things: masks and murder. First, we're going to dive into a little true crime story, and then we'll follow it up with a feel-good self-care session where we try out a new face mask and tell you a little bit about it.
But before we dive into our story, just a quick reminder that we are not experts, so please don't take our comments as hard facts. We did our best to research everything and, of course, added in a little personal flair that stems from both of our true crime obsessions.
So, continuing on with our little billboard series is a case that's a little closer to home for us and is actually still unsolved. The case takes place in Baltimore, Maryland, back in 1996, and this March will mark 25 years since Joanne, aka Jody LeCornu, was murdered. Jody and her identical twin sister Jenny were born on October 28th of 1972. And that being said, identical twins are actually extremely rare, only accounting for 3 out of every 1,000 births. And not surprisingly, as they grew up, the girls were inseparable. According to Psychology Today, twins share a primary attachment that is irreplaceable.
Just like Mary-Kate and Ashley.
And it actually stems from their sharing in utero life, which is where their nonverbal communication and their need for closeness begins. Twins actually find comfort in physical proximity to each other. It allows them to maintain a sense of oneness between each other. So, Jody and Jenny were the daughters of John and Linda LeCornu, and they had 2 other sisters, Laura and Diane. When the girls were little, the family lived in Annapolis, Maryland, which is probably because their dad graduated from the U.S. Naval Academy and was a retired Marine Corps colonel.
Yeah, makes total sense.
Yeah, given the area.
Mm-hmm.
He was also an assistant state's attorney for Anne Arundel County, where he prosecuted drug and violent crimes.
Interesting. I wonder how he jumped there.
I have no idea. I'm sure he has led a very interesting life.
Yes.
I would love to hear more about it, but we're here to talk about Jody. So let's fast forward a little bit to 1996, which was a leap year, and I'm only bringing it up because it's somewhat important later for our little timeline. So in 1996, the twins are 23 years old. Jenny was living in California, but remained in constant contact with Jody, who was a college student at Towson University, which is just outside of Baltimore, Maryland. And fun little fact, I did do a semester there after I moved back from Florida.
And you felt what about it?
I will keep my comments to myself. I was not a big fan. But
it's not for everyone. College is not for everyone.
Well, and in my defense, I did transfer in as a junior and was put in the freshman dorms.
Oh, rough.
Yeah. So I was older than my RA. I'm pretty sure I was the only person in the entire building over the age of 21.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah.
But that also should have made you the most popular person.
Well, I also didn't have a roommate. They put me in a room by myself, which was nice.
Nice, but also isolating.
Nice, but isolating.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I would have rather had roommates.
Yeah. Okay. I feel you.
So I think feel like that.
It's not the college. It's the situation.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. Okay. More so I didn't like the situation I was in, but that's neither here nor there. For Jody, she, at the time, wasn't, and I can completely relate to this, she wasn't entirely sure what she wanted to do with her degree, but she was studying geriatrics.
Very cool.
Adorable.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah. She also had recently acquired a part-time receptionist job at the Eastern Savings Bank, and it really seemed like her life was looking up and she was finally on the right path. And I say that because even though Jody was young and beautiful and, of course, loved by all her friends and family, it wasn't exactly all sunshine and rainbows. Jody was known to dabble in drugs and was reported to have a drinking problem, which is something that she dealt with on and off and something that her and her boyfriend, Steve, had in common.
I mean, that doesn't sound very different from, like, I don't know, most college kids trying things out. I mean, that's kind of what college is for.
Yeah.
I mean, not necessarily drugs, but, like, just trying new stuff, seeing if you like it. How's it feel?
Yeah, I mean, and while I think most kids that are kids, young adults that are, in their early 20s do drink excessively, since they said it was something that she dealt with on and off, like, maybe she had been doing it since she was a teenager and, like, was getting blackout drunk, but...
Yeah, yeah, I'm not saying it's in a healthy amount, but that description doesn't scream, like, go to rehab.
Yeah, I don't know. But, so Steve and Jody actually met in a bar, and drinking was a big part of their relationship.
Also, probably a huge... commonality in people in college.
Mm-hmm. Living, yeah.
Partying.
Partying and living with their, so yeah, mm-hmm. 100%. I'd been there, done that. So Jody and Steve lived together off campus, and he was actually a lot older than she was. She actually lied about her age when they first met, so.
I mean, age is but a number for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely a point that you mature enough that it kind of, like, doesn't necessarily matter, or you're at least in a life stage, mm-hmm. that you're all kind of the same.
Yeah.
But that's a temperamental time frame, so.
I also feel like that obviously had to be something that they got over and worked past, since they ended up, like, dating for a while and living together.
Yeah. Yeah. Either they were good avoiders, or they, like, handled their shit like growing up, so. Yeah. I guess we don't know.
Guess we'll never know.
But what we do know, while they were both more than social drinkers, they were different types, which, you know, if anyone has a friend that drinks differently than you do, you know what this is like. Jody preferred to go out and be social, but her boyfriend preferred to stay in at the house and drink in comfort. This, of course, triggered a lot of fights. Steve didn't care that Jody was drinking, since he too, of course, was out drinking himself, but he did care that she was going out all the time. On February 29th, the couple got into a fight over this difference of drinking preference. The next morning, before either of them headed off to work, Steve asked Jody not to come home that night, presumably so he could just, like, have a little space and cool off, but, again, like, we don't really know. Now, assuming that she would probably go to stay at her parents', like, it wouldn't be that huge of an ask. It's not like he, like, put her out on the streets.
Where did her parents live?
In Annapolis.
Oh, yeah, no, that's totally fair. Not... I mean, that's a good, what, 30, 45 minutes without traffic?
Yeah, I mean, yes, you're not wrong, but at least she wasn't, like, homeless. You know, I've lived that far from my parents before, and while it's not like, ooh, I love to make that drive, it's not that bad. And, I mean, people commute way more than that, especially up here. Good Lord. I mean, people commute 2 hours each way sometimes, the unlucky people. But, I mean... I'm going to go with, she also had, like, some level of friends.
I'm assuming so, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, even if you're not my closest friend, if you needed a couch to crash on.
I got you.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not an unusual thing to ask for, so I would think she could have relied on someone if she wanted to. And also, like, if she's really against it, it's her place. She could have said no. She could have been like, you know what? We have the day. How about I'll just come home afterwards and we'll talk about it then? I mean, there are a lot of ways to go about it, but... Of course, she's only one of the two, so can't control everything.
Yeah.
But anywho, they both went off to work about their normal days. When Jody got off work, she went to her favorite local bar to unwind. She was a regular there and knew the owners and a lot of the staff. She stayed until about the time the bar closed. Then the owner asked if Jody would give one of the employees a ride home. It wasn't someone that she knew particularly well. And despite being someone who took extra precautions when it came to her personal safety, such as always asking someone to make sure that she got to her car safely, Jody agreed. Now, like I just said, Jody did normally take extra safety precautions in her life, but she was also someone who would be the first to help another person out if they needed it. So, since the owner was someone she knew pretty well and vouched for this worker, when they asked for her help, she agreed. After dropping the worker off at her home, Jody stopped at an ATM and then a liquor store to buy a little beer. Now, this could have maybe been a peace offering for her boyfriend, or maybe she was just trying to keep her buzz going. I mean, honestly, who knows? Either one's kind of the right answer. Do what you want to do. But the Justice for Jody website mentions that she was accepting her boyfriend's request of her not coming home.
So probably she was trying to keep her buzz going, just didn't know what she was doing, trying to, like...
Yeah, give him a little space, kind of looking for something to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So at around 3 a.m., Jody went and parked in a nearby parking lot of what at the time was known as the Calder, but today is known as the Drumcastle Government Center, which is right off York Road.
Oh, York Road.
Well, yeah. No, so actually I feel like part of why I'm pointing that out is because it's one of the, like, the few roads that I remember from my very short time at Towson. I also feel like it's kind of like a main road up there. But also, it is important to the story, so you can take that pin and shove it up your ass.
Because I'll keep my sass in line then, sorry.
So the shopping center was not in an unknown area for Jody. It was actually around the corner from the apartment that her and Steve shared, and about 3 miles from the tavern, the bar, whatever that she liked to frequent. And this is a super weird move for Jody to make, and not just because it's, you know, the middle of the night in Baltimore, but also because Jody was super paranoid about something happening to her living in Baltimore. You can actually hear her sister Jenny in an interview on the Crime Junkie episode that covers this case say that Jody used to tell Jenny that she was terrified to live in Baltimore because she was really afraid she was going to get shot.
Yeah, I kind of understand that. It does seem a little sketchy. I mean, she probably was really out of sorts to resort to that level of, like, I don't know, like, what you want to do with yourself for the evening instead of just simply going home. Yeah. But at the same time, she gave him space. It wasn't 9 o'clock. So, like, why are you punishing yourself? Do what you got to do. You're important too, right? Like, just because he wants one thing doesn't mean you don't want another.
Yeah, preach. Do what's right for you. 100%. Yeah. Now, regardless of this being a strange move for Jody and of her fear, she actually pulled into the parking lot, and while she was sitting there, she made a few phone calls.
I'm going to ask probably a silly question, but I assume we don't know the numbers that she called.
I've not seen it reported anywhere.
That's insane. So,
yeah.
That exists. That 100% exists.
Yeah.
Who did she call? Oh, maybe that's a, yeah, maybe that's a suspect. Oh, so strange. Yeah.
But either way, a little while later, another car, a white BMW to be specific, pulled up into the same parking lot, and the driver, which was a man, got out and he approached Jody's car. Now, when he got close, Jody actually rolled down her window and the two had a brief conversation, which, you know, leads me to speculate she probably knew him or was expecting him. What other reason would you have for rolling your window down to talk to somebody at 3 a.m.?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I wouldn't roll down my window for anyone at 3 a.m. in a parking lot while I'm alone, so yeah.
100% no. So the man actually went back to his car, but Jody kept her window down. I don't know, maybe she was expecting him to come back with something.
Oh, I mean, it has to be a drug deal, right?
That's exactly where my mind goes.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean, what else would make sense?
Yeah,
meeting someone random in a BMW in a parking lot at 3 a.m
Yeah, but he didn't come back to the car. He actually got in his car and pulled out a 38 Magnum handgun and shot through the rear window of Jody's car. The bullet went through the back windshield and tore through the driver's seat and then entered Jody's back and severed her spine.
Oh, my God. That's awful. I don't know. Awful?
It's, yeah.
Like, oddly good aim. I feel like that has to be lucky. Like, who can do that? No one.
Murderers.
That's yes. Who. Yes. That's maybe who. Someone that's practiced.
Yeah. No. And you're right. It is fucking awful. And it sounds, obviously, it sounds like it's a fatal shot, but it didn't kill Jody. She somehow managed to drive her car out of the parking lot, across 5 lanes of traffic, and into the parking lot of a little strip mall across the highway. In the strip mall, there's a Giant, and some of their employees there and a delivery person at the Boston Market remember hearing the gunshot, and then they saw Jody's car coming into the parking lot, circling around it, and finally coasting to a stop when it bumped into a curb.
Oh, my God. That's got to be horrifying for someone to see.
It's got to be just so bananas. Like, you don't know what's going on. And then all of a sudden, there's a gunshot, which I feel like in Baltimore, probably not too unheard of. But then all of a sudden, this car just comes in and starts circling the parking lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is even more bananas is that the assailant actually followed Jody and waited in the shadows while she died alone in her car. And then, in a calm, unhurried manner, he walked over to her vehicle, reached through the open window, leaning over her body, and put the car in park. Then he took something out of her car. And for a long time, the authorities, nobody really knew what he took. But at some point later, it was determined that it was her phone and her purse, because that's what's listed on the Justice for Jody website.
That's insane. Honestly, this, like, upsets me. I've read the story. It still upsets me. But okay, after the suspect took his sweet time cleaning up the mess, and obviously not being too worried that someone would see him, he decided to flee the scene. Pulling out of the parking lot, turning south on York Road, your favorite road, Nicole.
It is my favorite.
And then east on Walker Avenue. By the time the witnesses called for help, it was too late, and when police arrived on the scene, Jody was already dead. The witnesses described the gunman as a black man with stocky build, wearing a camouflage jacket and driving a white BMW. Despite this level of information, no composite sketch was ever created, and the description of the suspect was not released to the public. Police did pull surveillance footage from the area surrounding where everything went down. Unfortunately, Giant System, which I think is where Jody's car was stopped closest to, was actually down that night.
Of fucking course.
Right? Isn't that how it always happens?
Yes.
And the footage that they were actually able to review wasn't exactly what I would call helpful. For one, it was the 90s, so the quality is not actually great to begin with. For another, it was snowing. So, honestly, the visibility just kind of looked like, I don't know, snow. So, again, not great. In the end, the police weren't able to get a clear picture of the guy or the license plate on his car. They pulled prints off of Jody's car, but when it came into the when they put it into the system, no hits resulted.
Now, I'm actually curious if the prints have ever been rerun in the years since, or I don't know how it works. Are they like stored in the database, being tied to the case, and then if whoever's prints there like gets arrested, it flags it and it like ties them together? I don't know.
No, honestly, that's a great point. I am not sure. My assumption is that yes, the prints are probably in the database, but I don't know if like they're connected to be searched to someone else, or if it's like reverse, it has to be connected to a person.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume that they would have fingerprints here, like it could be Jane Doe 1, Jane Doe 5.
Yeah.
Right? And then, no idea.
I feel like, but given the number of cases that are unsolved with fingerprint evidence, that they have to be like rerun.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Who does technology? Can you please make something where it's like, I'm going to store these fingerprints, and then if anybody anywhere ever runs them, I'm going to let them know, hey, I know who this person is.
Yeah. Flag.
Red flag. Number 12.
It's him. It's him. Yeah, I'm not sure. And honestly, having actually read this full story, mm-hmm. done some research myself, like, is this case active? Like, is it?
I think it's classified as cold, but the family isn't letting that just happen to them. The case is still open. Like,
right. Okay. So they're not like letting it go.
Yeah. I feel like it's like cold, but nobody's actively working on it.
Actually, you know what? This is going to make me sound really stupid because we should have talked about this in advance. What is the definition of a cold case?
An unsolved
but
case.
After what period of time? Mm-mm. I never thought about it. You know?
That's actually a very good question. I don't know if you can hear me typing in the background.
Type.
So, according to the National Institute of Justice, a cold case is any case whose probative investigative leads have been exhausted. So, that literally means that a case that's only a few months could still be defined as cold.
So, if the cop's like, you know what? I just can't.
I've done everything I can. I'm not getting anywhere. I'm not getting any new leads. I'm not getting any new ideas. It's cold.
So that's disheartening because then that's by definition up to the detective on it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you honestly, if you have a shitty detective, you just have a lot of cold cases because, I mean, let's just classify, he's lazy. Or she's lazy, or, you know, like, whatever.
Yeah, 100% with you.
I feel like it should be after, like, so many interviews or so many years or after three detectives tried or...
Yeah, like, I feel like...
There's got to be some benchmark.
I like what you just said. I feel like multiple detectives should have to try, so it's not like, oh, well, yeah, Detective Green investigated this case and now it's cold because he couldn't find anything else. Well, Detective Red could come in and investigate it and see something that Detective Green didn't see and then fucking solve the case. Go Detective Red.
Yeah. Yeah, it just it's like luck of the draw. Like, what if you got a lazy detective or you got the world's best detective? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, very different circumstances.
Exactly.
The volume of cold cases mm-hmm. from Detective Green versus Detective Red, I bet, would be very different.
Yeah, because Detective Red's fucking badass.
Okay. We've taken this real off the rails, but I liked where we went.
Yeah, no, it was a good little tangent, so... How about we get back to the story?
Yeah, let's do that. Okay. All right, where were we? Now, remember how the police didn't mention the description of the suspect to the public?
Mm-hmm.
Well, despite knowing the make and color of the suspect's vehicle, that information was not released either.
Why not?
Yeah, just don't want any eyes on the road, I guess. I don't know. I'm sure there are reasons, it just was not. Even more, no crime scene photos were released until 20 years later, when they were released in People magazine and a local Baltimore TV station. Just interesting choices. 20 years later, just send it off to People. Okay. Mm-hmm. Based on a nice little Google search, we assume that the photos that were released at that time were the four photos that were in this kind of like collage we found.
And we'll put it on the Insta, don't worry.
Yeah. So one of the images was in the inside of Jody's car. So you can actually see like the bullet hole in the driver seat. Another was the outside of Jody's car. The third was the route that she drove after the shooting. And finally, what we think is the white BMW. It's not actually clear, so I'm not 100% sure that that's what it is, but it makes the most sense to me. It doesn't look the same, but both Jody's and the BMW are white, so it's a little hard to tell in the photos. The part that's really confusing to me, though, is that both car pictures have the license plate covered. So covering Jody's license plate seems really logical, right? Mm-hmm. Protect her and her family's privacy, but why would you cover the BMW's license plate, especially if the police couldn't read it?
Yeah, that literally makes zero sense. Sorry. No, that literally makes zero sense to me. Like, I'm 100% in agreement. I think it's a white BMW. Why the fuck is the license plate covered?
Yeah.
Like, also, why wouldn't you run it if you could?
But also, like, who cares if someone else can figure out what it says? You're looking for that person.
Exactly.
Why are we covering that?
Or are they?
Conspiracies!
Dun, dun, dun. Anyway.
All right. So this all boils down to a huge example that the investigation into this crime was sloppy from the beginning. And Jody's family would actually agree with that. They said the police returned Jody's car to them pretty quickly. Jenny, her sister, even recalls, as the Crime Junkie podcast said, that the fingerprinting kit was still inside the car. So kind of seems like they were in a rush and that they didn't even take time to, I don't know, take their own information with them.
Yeah, no.
It's just strange.
Yeah. And my question is, like, is it the fingerprinting kit just like what they used to collect the fingerprints? Or is it like the actual samples of fingerprints?
I should hope not so.
Yeah. If it's actual samples of fingerprints, like...
Yeah, but just...
We need new investigators.
Right. So, as people that have no idea...
As speculators, as we are.
The fingerprint kit, would that be a new kit per every scene? Right?
Right, like, yeah.
I think you would use the same tools, but they would at least have to be, let's call it, professionally cleaned in between, so you're not spreading DNA or evidence.
No cross-contamination or whatever, yeah.
So, you may not throw them away, but are they, like, all I'm thinking are, like, the barber's, like, hair tools mm-hmm. come out of the little plastic bag, everything's been sterilized, like, that's what I'm envisioning. You get this nice, fresh kit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, maybe someone just, like, overlooked it. Maybe it's not as big as we're thinking.
I don't know. I still think it's kind of a sloppy job.
I mean, yeah. It's probably not good form, but...
Yeah. So, John, Jody and Jenny's father, was actually the primary advocate for the case and was the point person with, you know, everyone. You know, law enforcement, prosecutors, whatever. And being a prosecutor himself, he was actually used to working with law enforcement and trusted them to look into every lead and question every suspect. You know, to go the whole nine and, you know, I don't know, do their job. But, of course, wanting to know what happened to his daughter, he was constantly asking for updates and where the case stood. But it turns out that within the span of about 6 months, based off of the description provided by witnesses, police were able to zero in on a suspect. Little fact that they neglected to tell the family about for, I don't know, 15 years.
I don't understand that. He's asking for updates. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't they just say blanket, we have a suspect in custody, in mind.
We have someone we're looking into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Why would you not say that?
Yeah. No, I have no idea. Like, I can understand for a couple of months while you're, like, trying to, like, surveil the guy or, like, see what he's doing or whatever, whatever. But for 15 years, you don't mention anything to the family?
No. That's cruel. Like, that's all I want to say. It's just cruel.
It's very cruel. Yeah.
Tell the family what you can, what you know, but what you can.
What you can. Yep. So, without knowing that the progress that the police had actually made, John carried on advocating for and trying to get justice for Jody. He did this up until the early 2000s, which is when he was diagnosed with cancer, causing him to slow down a little bit. And sadly, John lost his battle with cancer and passed away without ever knowing what happened to his daughter.
Awful.
It breaks my heart. Now, with her father no longer spearheading the movement, Jenny stepped up and turned from being a shy, unassuming woman to becoming the advocate for her family to find out what happened to her twin sister, Jody.
Totally fair.
Yeah. In a Washington Post article, she says, quote, "All of a sudden, one day, I had a backbone."
I love that quote. I think that's fantastic. You know, a lot of people just say they have a purpose or a cause, and that's, like, why they are the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's a perfect example.
Yeah. She's like, all right, well, my dad's not here to carry this torch. Somebody needs to speak for my sister. And she's like, I got to do it.
I love it. It's the connection.
It is their connection. Yeah. So Jenny's actually contacted people at news outlets, on websites, crime shows, magazines, podcasts, literally anyone who would spread the word about her sister's case just a little bit further. She started the website Justice for Jody, where we got a ton of our information. So thank you, Jenny.
Yes, your work is doing so much.
Yes, and hopefully we're doing your sister's story some justice. She also helped to get the reward for information increased from $32,000 to $100,000.
Wow.
Yeah. My guess is, like, through, like, crowdsourcing and, like,
probably, you know,
public,
yeah,
donation, whatever.
General advocation. Yeah, sure.
And Jenny also met with a private investigator who told her to try to get the files so that he could help her out in trying to figure out what happened or if there was more that could be done. But because it was still an open case, Jenny was denied the files, which is interesting because when she met with detectives, Jenny said that they pretty much told her, Jody's case, we've exhausted all our leads. It's pretty much just sitting somewhere in a closet.
That's exactly what we were talking about, the mentality.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine hearing that? Like,
No. Mm-hmm. I would lose my mind if that was someone I cared about.
Yeah, I have no idea how I would react. I know there would be tears.
Yeah, not good. Yeah. It wouldn't be good.
So, hearing that, Jenny actually filed a lawsuit to try to get some access to the case files, which ended up resulting in a confidential settlement being reached. But still, no information was given to her. And more recently, she saw the movie Three Billboards Outside Ebbing. Have we talked about this before?
The movie, yes.
So, actually, this gave Jenny some inspiration. And she actually originally took out a billboard on my favorite, York Road, near where the murder took place. But then later, she took out three billboards right in the heart of Baltimore, seeking any information that would help her figure out what happened to her sister. The billboards state, "Do you know who killed Jenny LeCornu? $100,000 reward," and lists where she was murdered, the tip line, and it even says, like, you can learn more about this on the Crime Junkie podcast, and links it there. Jenny says that she can't move on until she finds answers, and she's just hoping that somebody's going to call her that will have information. Police say that the case has gone cold, but Jenny is still determined to not give up hope. She says, quote, "As long as I'm standing upright, I'll be fighting for her. She was part of me, and it's just hard to live my life and not be finding her killer," end quote. As we've said, as of today, the case is still unsolved, and anyone with information is asked to call the Baltimore County Police at 410-887-3943 or Maryland's Metro Crime Stoppers at 866-756-2587 or to submit information through the website metrocrimestoppers.org. And honestly, that's kind of all we have for you tonight. Today, whatever time you're listening, we wish it was more, and we sincerely hope that Jenny's able to find out what happened to her sister 25 years ago.
Yeah, what a horrible burden's not the word I'm looking for. What a horrible...
It is a burden. Just it's a weight to carry
on your... Circumstance to have to live with?
Yeah.
I really cannot even begin to imagine the loss and the anger that goes along with that. And I know we've talked about this before. We talked about this in like episode 2 mm-hmm. with Archie Williams. But anyone that can come out of something this horrific mm-hmm. and be anywhere near positive is better than like the world deserves.
Yeah.
Right? Like finding a ray of sunshine in this, finding the conviction you need to keep fighting for someone, to serve justice, yeah. to do what you think is best. Mm-hmm. Like, that takes so much. And I think that's extremely commendable. I do not envy you.
No,
but, I mean, that's freaking amazing. Like, hats off. Well done. And anything we can do, like, we will support. So if anyone ever has maybe something to say, and doesn't want to submit it themselves, send it to us. We'll do it for you.
Yeah. Shoot us an email.
Like, we don't care. Let's help solve some crimes. This is...
I would love to. Yeah.
Crazy. Families deserve answers. It's been 25 years.
I can't imagine living that long not knowing what happened to someone that I shared literally my entire life with.
Yeah.
Like, from, like, conception to...
Yeah. A sibling? Ugh. Yeah. That makes me ill. I can't. Yeah.
But I think maybe we should wind down. I think we definitely need it.
Yes, yes. Let's have a happy note on this story. It was heavy.
Very heavy. There's a lot going on, a lot to unpack. Let's go get some wine.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
So, Nicole, tell us, what mask are we doing this week?
So tonight we're doing one mask from the Mini Meow Trio from I Do Care. We've decided to do Disco Kitten, which is an illuminating, detoxifying, replenishing mask. You should apply it to clean, cleansed skin, let it dry for about 20 minutes, and then peel off, starting with the outer edges. Some of the key ingredients are the white flower complex, which contains lily, orange flower, elderflower, and magnolia to replenish your skin complexion, with rich vitamin content to give you a softer skin and a more even tone. There is diamond powder.
Ooh. Oh, I can see it. Shine yes. bright like a diamond, for
we
sure.
We are shining bright. This is going to help boost the elasticity and remove impurities. And finally, there is oat, which is a superfood that works as an antioxidant to help keep your skin healthy and strong.
I'm excited. I love the way this looks.
I feel like a sexy tin man. Not gonna lie.
That's amazing. Yes.
Yeah. So.
Oh, it does. Know. And it smells very good. Not skipping to the grades because we don't have them yet, but.
Still on our face. We are doing this one along with you yeah. for a change.
So if you hear us talk about tightening along the way, mm-hmm. it's because it's just occurring.
It is happening.
I'm not going to lie. I'm already surprised it's a 20-minute mask because I feel like it's...
It's tightening already, yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. Pretty quick.
Yeah. Agreed.
So we'll see.
And I don't know if that means we like didn't put enough on our face.
It looks pretty even for both of us.
For the most part,
I mean,
yeah.
we'll see how it comes off, but... I don't know. We'll find out.
Pray for me. Ow. That was my elbow. But still pray for me. Me and my funny bone. Oh, God.
All right. So let's pass the time. All right. So everyone, we did already set a timer. We set a timer for 20 minutes, like right when we finished this. Mm-hmm. So it puts us at almost exactly 17 minutes now. Dun, dun, Duh. So let's just chat for a solid 17 minutes or so.
Yes. So I actually have two. I'm going to just go ahead and take the mic because, you know, it's whatever.
Why not? Sexy tin man over there.
Sexy tin lady. Thank you very much. So I actually have two fun skincare stories.
Please tell.
The first one, my other best friend, actually. My child, we grew up together.
Yeah, I know.
You have another best friend.
I know. But still, yes, other was the right way to say it.
Yes. So my other best friend actually was texting me, talking to me about some issues she was having with breakouts. And I was very proud because I was able to ask her, well, are you using X? Are you using Y? And I asked her if she was using a toner. And she said, no. I said, oh, well, you should really look into using a toner after you cleanse, but before you moisturize, because it helps remove the extra impurities from your face. And look at you. I see your face.
I know. You guys, no one can tell, but it's a, who are you? But also, I'm trying not to crack my mask. Mm-hmm.
So that conversation happened maybe 1 or 2 days ago, but she texted me, yes. So it had to have been at least 2 days ago, maybe three. But she texted me yesterday and said that she went out and got the toner that I recommended. Because I was like, you should use a mild toner because your skin's sensitive. It breaks out, blah, blah, blah. And I recommended the one. So I said, you know, the only one that I've used since I started using toner is the Mario Badescu one.
Yes, okay.
And I use their, it's like a...
the rose one?
I use the lavender one.
The lavender. Because
I feel like lavender is very calming.
Okay.
But so I use the, it's witch hazel and lavender. And I was like, this is the one I use. I said, full disclaimer, when I very first started using it, I didn't feel that it was mild. Like, mm-hmm. My face was like, what are you doing to me? But now I find it very calming. I find it very relaxing. And so she said she started using it and she's already seeing a difference in her skin.
Whoa, so, that's amazing.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh, look at me. I learned something.
Oh, that makes me so happy. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like I'm a person. So just let's just unpack it.
Unpack.
I feel like I am always really interested in trying new products. But I am really bad about mixing my products together.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what's doing what and how it's reacting. So all of a sudden I've tried three new products and all of a sudden my skin's like redder than normal or it looks better. And I can only assume it's just one of them. And
you don't know which one it is.
Yeah, I know it's a really bad habit, but I get very excited about skincare, just like samples.
Yeah.
And I want to try them. And I'm trying to get really regimented about like, okay, so for these few days, I'll do it. And if I see anything, I'll write it down and I'll remember it. It's very hard to do, to be really honest. But that makes me really happy because I feel like now every time I try a new product, like I always hesitate to wonder if it's really working for me. And it's really nice to hear it from like, honestly, a purist, like a skincare purist. That does really work because I've used it for so long. And I mean, God, who knows what brand or version has helped me at this point, but toners work.
Yeah, they do, 100%. And then my second skincare story that I told you. So my neighbor who lives two floors above me, she came over and last night she goes, you've got such great skin. What moisturizer do you use? And I was like, well, I kind of have a variety of them. And I brought them out. And I also talked about the very first mask we ever did with Selena and how I just loved it. And she asked me the next time I do an Ulta run if I would grab her. Not just her, but her and her, like her bestie. If I would grab her too so that she could have one and her friend could have one.
Oh, so the right way to do it with a friend.
I feel like I'm making moves. In my skincare life.
Oh, my God. I think I need to start peddling skincare more. Because it's like my friend group already gets it from Selena, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then our personal friend group gets it from both of us.
Yeah.
So I'm not really expanding us anymore.
Yeah.
I got to work on it. I need a new friend group.
No new friends.
People that don't know about skincare.
I'm sorry. You're going to go get new friends in the middle of a pandemic?
It's called Zoom, Nicole. We can Zoom date.
Who wants to be my Zoom friend?
We should do a Zoom with people. Do you want to Zoom with us?
Yeah.
Zoom with us.
Let us know. Email us. Oh, we'll set something up.
Yeah.
We'll do a Zoom happy hour and face mask session.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yes.
Ooh, I would totally do that.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, that's great. Okay, if anyone's interested at all, one person, that's fine. We'll do it with one person.
100%.
DM us, email us, contact us in a way, send up bat signal, a mass we'll murder signal.
Looks like a person with a mask on.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know what
use
that
is. Use our logo. Just massmurderpodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Instagram @massmurderpodcast. Message us on Facebook.
That would be so fun.
We're 100% in. Anybody who wants to join us, even if it's just the two of us and one other person,
yeah,
we're 1,000% about it.
Yeah, we'll give it a little bit just to see if anyone really wants to talk to us, and like we'll be mildly offended, but like kind of not at all. Like everyone's able to do whatever they feel like, but like if you want to talk to us, just let us know. Yeah, we're happy to help.
Talk skincare. We can talk.
You can ask us wine recommendations. Mm-hmm. We try those every time we talk to. So,
yeah. Tell us what wine you like and we'll drink it with you.
Yeah. If you want to talk about self-indulgence, we are your gals.
Yes. We like to hashtag treat ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You had a story you wanted to tell me as well.
Yes. Oh, yes. Okay. So, I have officially been trying retinol for a couple of weeks now.
Okay.
It was something I've always been afraid of because I have dry skin, which leads me to generally sensitive skin, which in my head doesn't necessarily make sense, but like I understand it.
Get it? Okay.
Yeah. So I've been trying to pull back from thinking that I had totally normal skin and I can do whatever I want. Apparently I can't, because every time I've gotten any professional to look at my skin, they've laughed at me when I said I have normal skin.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I typically am like, oh, honey, no. Like that's the response. And that's fine. It took me a while to understand because I was like, my skin seems normal to me. It's normal on my face.
Yeah, what's normal to you is not what is normal to the general public.
Right.
Understand.
Yes. So now that I've tried all of these like extra hydrating things, my skin's very different than it was, you know, let's call it 3 years ago at this point.
Okay.
But anywho, so trying retinol. I tried the Inky retinol. It's like a $10 retinol. Mm-hmm. I bought it from Sephora. It was one of the cheaper ones. Excuse me. One of the cheaper ones, because, I mean, I wasn't going to just, like, dip my toes into the most expensive version.
Yeah, understandable.
Which, actually, in hindsight, maybe I should have. Maybe I should have gotten a really small, expensive one first. But anyways.
But you don't want to blow like $80 or something to not make a difference.
Right, totally. I know retinol is important. I know it's something, especially when you're in your 30s, it's something you want to try to start reducing wrinkles and helping reverse any sun damage that you have, okay, etc.
Glad you mentioned that, because I was just about to Google retinol.
Yeah. So I tried it. The first night I put it on, my face did turn a little red. Not overwhelmingly or anything, but just, like, it looked irritated.
Mm-hmm.
I was assuming that it was going to take me a long time to be able to, like, really get into it. It says on at least the one I got to try it, like, 1 to 2 times a week at first, and then you can step up depending on how your skin reacts.
Oh, interesting.
So I did it, like, a Sunday for a couple weeks, and everything seemed fine. Now I do it, like, Sundays and Wednesdays,
okay,
kind of thing.
Or, huh.
Yeah. But honestly, I can't tell a difference, but I feel like it's doing a good job. My skin's not reacting anymore. It really only reacted that one time. Huh. So I think, I don't know. It's just one of those things that I just like, I'm believing in it.
Okay.
And I don't know if I'm being suckered in, but Selena says retinol is everything.
So I guess
it's like the opposite of sunscreen, but in a good way.
Interesting.
Right. It's like it's in the same realm. It's still protecting your skin from like sun damage.
Okay.
But it's reversing instead of preventing.
Interesting. So I guess my question is retinol like you've been doing, like applying it to your face, but I've also read that it's something that you can you can take as like a supplement. Which way is the better way to do it?
Oh, I don't know if there's a better way.
I guess that's a Selena question.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question, because it's like it's like collagen.
Yeah.
Right? Like we did our collagen mask and we love it, but I take a collagen pill.
I'm almost at the end of my disgusting unflavored collagen powder.
Oh, yeah. Yours was gross. She tried it. That's not unflavored.
Mm-mm, no.
That's what I call, like, off-brand ass. Vanilla.
Tastes like ass.
It's trying to be vanilla.
It's trying to, yeah, trying to be something, and it's failing.
And you can taste it through everything.
Uh-huh.
Coffee. Uh-huh. Smoothies.
Uh-huh.
Still taste it.
Mm-hmm.
Never a good sign for something unflavored.
Yeah. No, I've found that if I put the collagen in the cup before I brew my coffee, mm-hmm. and it, like, dissolves while the coffee's brewing, I can taste it less. And then if I put enough cream and sugar in, then I don't taste it.
But see, that's the problem. If you put enough cream and sugar in, you're masking it.
Yeah. So in hopefully, like, another week or two, I will be looking for a new way to take collagen. So I will be reaching out to you to see what the shit is that you use.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I mean, I can tell you now. Again, like, it's not a promotion. It's just genuinely what I'm using. So I use a website called Care Of. Actually, if anyone wants a code, I think I get, like, $10 free for someone. If you
want I want it.
Yeah, well, I think I get it for, like, anyone. People. Yeah.
Okay.
So if someone wants $10 off and try this thing, like, DM us. I'll send you a code. That's fine. But so it's Care Of. You do a quiz of all of your skincare and, like, healthcare problems.
Okay.
And then it gives you a list of supplements that it recommends for you. And you don't have to buy all of them, of course, but you signed up for a one-time or a reoccurring purchase.
Oh,
and so I did collagen and electrolytes. Those were my two for having general dryness, like skin dryness. Those were my main concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been doing both. I actually think the electrolytes have been amazing because I am a human that drinks definitely more than 8 glasses of water a day. And people think it's weird. And yes, I do have to go to the bathroom all of the time.
Well, I also, like, on just to piggyback off you, I also drink a lot of water. I think that I've been told you're supposed to drink half your body weight in ounces of water a day, like, minimum.
But I think that it totally depends on you as a human, like, how much water you can ingest, because you've heard of those people getting so ill or even dying from doing, like, water challenges.
Yeah, and they, like, drown.
Right. It's just, like, not everyone can ingest the same amount of water.
Yeah.
So I know I can drink more than probably the average person.
Mm-hmm.
But should I be is the question. So I've been drinking electrolytes, and I have been drinking less water, but not feeling, like, thirstier or... Yeah, you know, a day I'm drinking, I'm not, like, hungover the next day, so it's not hurting me at all. It is a little counterintuitive for me to drink electrolytes when I'm not, like, doing a really hard workout.
Yeah.
But it seems to be working, so I'm not really going to hate on it. And the collagen's been great. To be honest, it's, again, one of those things I transitioned over to really heavy, like, body lotions. Like, I did body creams in the winter. I've been drinking... I did a supplement, a collagen supplement, and a collagen pill at different times. I don't think it mattered.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, I did the thing that I don't like doing. I tried all the things, so I don't really know which one did something for me. But I don't think there's harm in it. And if I'm going to spend money on anything right now, it's going to be on myself, my body, my health.
Girl, preach.
My mental health, what have you. So.
100%.
Yeah. I've decided that I'm just going to try to take care. I don't know why my throat keeps clogging.
You're not used to doing as much talking as
Yeah, I guess. Before. Yeah, that's true. When you're home by yourself all the time. But I'm trying really hard to keep on with exactly what I have been kind of, like, preaching for the last, let's say, year. Of taking care of myself.
You need to.
Yeah. Well, especially when you're home with you all the time, it's a little easier to remember that you have to be nicer to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
There's not as many distractions as, like, normal life would have.
Fair.
Yeah. Get off my soapbox.
Come on down. You are the next contestant on Mask Murder Podcast.
Oh, my Lord.
You can cut that out. I don't know why I said it.
No, I'm going to leave that in.
Yeah, go ahead. Whatever. I don't care.
So my mask is, like, legitimately flaking off my face.
It looks like it's already starting to peel itself off of your face. Yeah,
and I'm not going to lie, I did just move my face around, but now I can feel it vibrating and it's making me uncomfortable. Why doesn't yours look like that?
My skin just loves to suck things up, apparently.
Okay. Well, so we have 1 minute left in our 20 minutes.
I think we're going to just cut it short at 19 minutes.
Yeah, I think we're going to call it because it's, like, starting to come off.
So we're going
to
go ahead and pause here real quick, and we're going to go peel our faces off and moisturize. You should do the same.
BRB.
All right, and we're back.
Hello.
Hey, hey. All right, so Avery, how's your face feel?
It feels really good.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm going to be honest. I always feel so satisfied when we pull off one of those masks because my face just feels so free afterwards that even if it probably isn't a good mask, I would be really happy about it.
Yeah. No, it's – I kind of likened it to being a child and putting Elmer's glue on the back of your hand, waiting for it to dry and peeling it off. Felt like that on my face, and it was amazing.
Yeah. So I think a general peel-off mask is something just very satisfying. It did come off. We already talked about how, like, it looks really nice, so it's just kind of fun.
It is very fun.
It smells nice.
It came off pretty easy for both of us. For the little extra remnants, fun thing that Ave decided to do was try some witch hazel, right? That's what that was?
Microcella water.
Oh, it was just, okay.
It was just microcella water.
Oh, yeah. Just, I thought it was witch hazel for some reason.
Yeah.
But no, that's fun.
Yeah. But so my face feels, you know, cleaner, of course, a little tingly perhaps, but it feels pretty even. I'm not really sure how to grade this one because I can't tell what's just general satisfaction of having to peel off mask one or mask off, I guess, and the mask itself.
Fair.
Yeah. So B minus.
I'm just going to go with a solid B, personally.
Okay. All right. Not too far off. Yeah. I'm a little conflicted of what's just like the type of mask versus this mask. But I like the look. I like the color. The consistency was good. It was easy to put on, easy to take off.
Yep.
I feel like it's something I'd have to try more than once. But we do have a little trio pack of these like types of masks.
100%. So, we'll try another one maybe next week.
Yeah. So we can like kind of see how they go.
Yeah.
But so I think that this is nice. I just B minus. I'll just stop trying to beat a dead horse. B minus.
Okay. I'm going to stick with my solid B. Like you said, it was easy even for me to take off my face, which was fun. It was satisfying. My face feels good. It feels, I don't know, I feel brighter, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know if I look brighter, but I feel brighter, which is good.
Yes.
Like a diamond.
Shine bright like a diamond.
Exactly.
That's true.
Yeah. But so, yeah, I think the overall grade is a B.
Yeah, we'll go B.
Yeah.
Group B.
Group B. Solid. But, yeah, so that's that.
Yeah.
We're done?
Yeah. I think that's it.
Yeah. Let us know if you disagree. No, don't disagree with us.
Silently disagree. No.
Silently disagree.
You can tell us if you have an opinion, of course.
An opinion. Yeah. So if you have any questions, concerns, recommendations.
If you want to have a FaceTime with us or a Zoom or what have you.
If you want to do a face mask via Zoom with us, let us know. Email us at massmurderpodcast@gmail.com. DM us on Instagram. Our handle is @massmurderpodcast. Shoot us a message on Facebook. What do you think our handle is?
I think it's MM Podcast.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't think it would let us do it, Mass Murder Podcast. I can't remember from setting it up. Whatever. Look up Mass Murder Podcast. You'll find us.
Either way, find us, reach out to us, let us know you want to hang out digitally, virtually. So shoot us a message. We would love to hear from you. We'd love to hang out with you, see you, meet you, talk to you. And I guess that's all for this week.
Take care of yourselves.
Sources for this week include justiceforjody.com, baltimore.cbslocal.com, baltimoresun.com, Baltimore County, Maryland. Oh, no, it's baltimorecountymd.gov, washingtonpost.com, Crime Junkie episode from December 9th, 2019, Murdered, Jody LeCornu, crimejunkiepodcast.com, oxygen.com, npr.org, psychologytoday.com, and ulta.com. Bye!